Today, well, as you know, Fengji is presenting this work on integration of supply chain and stochastic inventory management. This has been sort of a major theme of his PhD thesis, and Fengji will actually be defending this Thursday. So I thought it would be, a good thing if he could present the work to this group, largely because I think the work he's done in this area, I think it feels very unique, because this integration between these two areas is something that has not really been done very extensively. In fact, I would say very little. And part of the reason is, as we'll see, whether you do it one way or the other, you always end up with the MINLP problem. So now, let me also mention very briefly. So Finch, again, as I mentioned before, will be defending this Thursday. He will be taking a position at Northwestern. This is actually in almost 2 years' time, because he will be doing first a postdoc at the Argonne National Lab. Okay, and before we get started, just want to make sure that first of all, everybody mute their phones, because if you remember last time, we had some difficulties with the quality of the delivery. So I hope that can everybody hear me well? Anybody have a problem with the volume or with the quality of the transmission?
That's fine.
It's fine. Okay. So again, please make sure everybody please mute their phones. And I think without further ado, let's have Fengji give his talk. Okay, Fengji. So if you want to get started.
Thanks for the kind introduction, and thank you for this opportunity to present part of my thesis about the integration of supply chain design operation with stochastic inventory management. So let's go to slide two. As you know, inventory is almost everywhere, such as the large storage tanks in the chemical complex, the stockpiles of biomass, or the boxes of final products in the warehouses. Most recent data from U.S. Census Bureau shows that the total value of inventory in the U.S. is around $1.4 trillion. This is almost equal to 10% of the gross domestic product of the United States. And another study by SMILE shows that more than half of this inventory are inefficient. This implies the economic opportunity of optimizing the inventory will be more than $700 billion. There are two types of major decisions in the inventory optimization across the entire supply chain. The first type of decision is about which location to store our inventory and what kind of chemicals we store. So this is a problem about supply chain design and operation. The second type of decision is about how much inventory we need to store in each location, especially under demand and supply uncertainty. So this is another question about stochastic inventory. An object of this one is to develop optimization models and methods for integration of supply chain design operation with stochastic inventory. Now in slide three, there are a few challenges towards this goal. The first challenge is how can we model a stochastic inventory system, in particular under uncertain customer demand and uncertain supply. And sometimes, especially for a multi-echelon inventory system, we also need to deal with the uncertain replenishment lead time and also the uncertain service level. In addition to this, we may want to consider the potential saving by using the risk pooling to group the customers and inventory locations in a few different facilities. The second challenge is how can we integrate the inventory model with the supply chain design operational model. There could be different time scales in the problem. For instance, inventory model could be a short-term dynamic operational decision, while a supply chain design would be a long-term strategy decision. In addition to this, we may need to model the timing relationship and uncertain internal demand for a multinational inventory system. The third challenge and the last challenge could be how can we effectively solve the large-scale industrial size problem. And an interesting point of this issue is that the integration always leads to non-convex, mixed integer nonlinear programming problem, which are typically difficult to solve, in particular for large-scale instance. And I guess this would be one of the reasons that this area has not been very well addressed so far in the literature. However, we are MINLP guys, and we know how to solve MINLP, and we like MINLP. So this is one way that we want to address this challenge. So in slide four, the outline of this talk will be given at least. We will first review a few stochastic inventory models, and then in the second part, we will discuss how to integrate stochastic inventory with supply chain design. And the last section of this talk will be dedicated to the process planning under supply and demand uncertainty with stochastic inventory. So let's start with the review of stochastic inventory models in slide 5 and slide 6. So here in slide 6, we show the inventory profile in a storage facility. And as you can see, the inventory level decreased due to the customer demand. And when a replenishment arrives, the inventory will bring up immediately. And there are quite a few important decisions involved in the inventory profile. And among these decisions, the most important one are the reorder points and the replenishment intervals. So in slide 7, in a general cases, we are usually given the expected demand rate is constant over a time horizon. In this case, you can consider inventory profile with safety stock as shown in slide 7 here. In the bottom of the inventory profile, we will have the part of safety stock. And on top of safety stock, we will have a number of identical rectangle triangulars, which is for the working inventory. And as you can see, the average of working inventory will be given as cycle stock. And the average inventory in the storage facility will be equal to the summation of cycle stock and the safety stock. In slide 8, the inventory system is usually controlled by a certain inventory policy. And the inventory policy could determine when we need to replenish and how much we need to replenish in each when we reorder for each time. And the inventory policy will affect the inventory level and the service level. There are two types of inventory policy which has been widely used in industry. The first type of inventory policy is called periodical review based stock policy. The periodical review system shows that each time inventory is checked at a regular periodical interval. For instance, we could check the inventory level at the beginning of every day, or at the beginning of every hour, or every month. And each time in the base stock policy, when we check the inventory, we will place an order to bring an inventory position up to a certain position S, which is called base stock level. And here, the inventory position is equal to the inventory on hand plus the inventory on transit. And we'll discuss more details about base stock policy in the next slide. The second kind of policy is called a continuous review QR policy. For a continuous review system, the inventory level is continuous checked. So each time when inventory level falls down to a certain point R, which is a reorder point, we will place an order of quantity Q. And it's interesting to know that if we have R plus Q equal to S, then the continuous review policy will be equal to the base stock policy. So in slide 9, the figure here shows the inventory profile under base stock inventory control policy. And as you can see again, in the bottom of this inventory profile is the safety stock. And on top of safety stock, we see two dotted lines. The black dot line is for inventory position, which is a summation of inventory on hand and inventory in transit. And the red solid line is the inventory on hand, which means the physical inventory in a storage facility. So the difference between inventory position and inventory on hand is the inventory in transit. And the inventory in transit allows part of inventory that has already been ordered but not yet arrived in a storage facility. So each time when we place an order for replenishment, the inventory position will be bring up directly to the base stock level, as you can see in the blue line on the top of this slide. But the physical inventory in the storage facility does not change until the replenishment has arrived after a certain lead time L. So the basic store level here is not a physical inventory level in the storage facility, but corresponds to the base store level. In slide 10, a special case of the base store inventory system is that we don't account for a demand uncertainty. In this case, we can see the inventory profile will be given in slide 10, like this. So the cycle inventory level follows a very nice a series of rectangle triangulars, and it's easy to see that in this case, the expected order quantity should be equal to the constant demand rate D times the review period P. And again, we can also figure out that the average working inventory or the cycle stock should be equal to half of the order quantity. So it should be given as the constant demand rate D times the review period P and divided by 2. So this is for the base stock inventory system. And in slide 11, slide 11 shows the inventory profile of a QR inventory policy. And here again, we can also see at the bottom of this inventory profile, we have a part of safety stock. And on top of safety stock, we have the cycle inventory. And the major feature of QR inventory policy is that each time when inventory level falls down to a reorder point R, the black dot line in the middle of the inventory profile. When the inventory level falls down to the reorder point R, we place an order for replenishment. And replenishment also takes some lead time to arrive. So the reorder point here should be equal to the expected demand over the lead time plus the safety stock. So in this case, you can easily see that the cycle stock, the cycle inventory of a QR inventory system should be also equal to half of the order quantity. However, the question is how can we determine the order quantity here in the QR inventory system? In slide 12, so if we consider the deterministic QR inventory system with uncertainty, and we also assume that there is a fixed ordering cost for each replenishment, and let's denote H as the unit inventory holding cost, and F is the fixed ordering cost for each replenishment, as in slide 12. Then we can figure out the total cost. Given in slide 13, the total cost should be equal to the summation of the inventory cost and the fixed ordering cost. So the red term, F times D divided by Q in the equation, shows the ordering cost in the average in a unit time period. And the green term, H times Q divided by 2, should be equal to the unit holding inventory holding cost. And H is the unit inventory cost, Q is order quantity, and Q divided by 2 will be the cycle inventory. And for this formulation of total cost, as we can see in the figure here, it's a convex function in terms of order quantity. So if we take the first order derivation and set it equal to 0, we could easily figure out what would be the optimal order quantity, as shown in the blue box here. And sometimes people call this economic order quantity. So far we have discussed how to adjust the order quantity and cycle inventory in a stochastic inventory system. And on top of below this cycle inventory, there's another important issue about safety stock. And that's in slide 14. We are now in slide 14. So the question is how can we determine the optimal safety stock level? As we can see here, if we are given a single stage inventory system and a demand falls normal distribution, then the optimal safety stock level should be equal to the standard normal derivative times the standard deviation of the uncertain demand. And here demand is in terms of the total demand. And if we take a step further to consider order processing time T, then the demand over the order processing time T will also follow the normal distribution. And the variance of this normal distribution should be equal to the order processing time T times the variance of the demand rate. And similarly, you can derive an optimal safety stock for a single stage inventory system under order processing time should be equal to the standard normal derivative Z alpha times the standard deviation sigma and times the square root of the order processing time T. For a multi-echelon inventory system, the problem becomes much more complicated, and there could be two kinds of major approach. One is called guaranteed service approach, and the other one is the stochastic service approach. Here we like to discuss about guaranteed service approach because this method would be very powerful and effective in terms of the large-scale network. And in the guaranteed service approach, what we did is that just make some change about a single-stage inventory. Under a square root, we will consider a so-called net lead time instead of order processing time. And more details about guaranteed service approach is given in the next slide, now in slide 15. So if you are given a multi-stage or multi-echelon inventory system, we basically assume in the guaranteed service approach that each stage has an order processing time T, which is a blue one, blue T, and a service time S, which is in red. So the order processing time T is considered as a summation of all the deterministic times unrelated to replenishment, and these may include transportation time, processing or production time, and a review period. And as you can see, the order processing time could be easily calculated directly or considered as a given parameter. So the major issue here is the service time S. Service time S is a variable for all stages except the last one. And the physical meaning of the service time is that by the time S, all the demand of the downstream will be satisfied. So it's somehow a response time to the orders. And as you can figure out in the figure here on top of this slide, if we consider the service time at the last stage of this inventory system, it could be somehow as a measure of the responsiveness because it represents how fast the entire inventory system could respond to the customer demand. The next slide, slide 16. After we define the service time and the processing time, we can further define the net lead time of each stage. which is given as the service time of the upstream stage, out of the upstream, plus the order processing time, and minus the service time to the downstream. And here we need to consider two extreme cases. The first extreme case is that if we have the service time as zero to the downstream, it means that every order from downstream will be satisfied immediately. And in this case, of course, we need to hold a lot of inventory, and it's somehow called a push system or a metal stock system. Another extreme case is that if we guarantee a service time to the downstream, just right equal to the upstream service time plus processing time. In this case, it means that the netting time will be equal to zero, and then we don't need to hold any inventory. It will be zero inventory, and this will be exactly the pull system or a made-to-order system. In slide 17, so there is an important effect, or important issue in the safety stock management about so-called a risk pooling effect. It shows that if we have a single facility, then the optimal safety stock should be equal to the service level parameter Z alpha times the standard deviation. And if you are given a number of facilities, each of them has uncertain demand, there could be two types of management policy. The first one is called distributed system or a decentralized system. In this system, each facility will maintain their own inventory, and the total safety stock in the system should be equal to the summation of the safety stock in each facility. So the optimal safety stock level in the distributed system should be equal to the formula given in the green box. Another situation is called a centralized system, which means that all the facilities share a common inventory. In this case, the total demand of the entire system also follows normal distribution, and the variance of this uncertain demand will be equal to the summation of variance in each individual demand. And then consequently, we will have the optimal safety stock as the formula given in the red box. And it's easy to figure that the one in the red box is always less than or equal to the one in the blue box. It means that using risk pooling or using centralization, we could reduce the safety stock and reduce the inventory. A simple example is given in the next slide, slide 18. So if you consider there are 100 storage facilities with IID random demand, and each of them has the same standard, has the same normally distributed uncertain demand. So before risk pooling, you can see that the total optimal safety stock should be equal to 200 sigma. But after risk pooling, after the centralization, if we plug in this formula, the optimal safety stock becomes 20 sigma. So for this simple example, it shows that up to 90% of safety stock could be reduced using risk pooling. So it's a very important effect, and we need to take into account in a model formulation. So in slide 19, now we are going to section 2, which is going to discuss about supply chain design with stochastic inventory. So in slide 20, the first problem we want to consider in this session is about supply chain design with the single stage stochastic inventory. And a general problem statement will be given like this. We have a supply chain superstructure, including a number of fixed suppliers, retailers, and a number of potential distribution locations. Here, each retailer has uncertain demand and false normal distribution, and all of storage facilities, such as distribution centers, will operate the inventory using a QR inventory policy under the continuous review. As the first step, we assume all the distribution centers has identical lead time for replenishment, and then it implies that we can lump all the suppliers into one. So in slide 21, a general model will be given like this. We have the object to minimize the total cost, including the investment cost to install a distribution center, the transportation cost from a supplier to the distribution center, and from the distribution center to the retailers, as well as the fixed ordering cost, the cycle stock cost, and the safety stock cost. Two kinds of major decisions are involved in this problem. The first type of decision is about network structure. We need to determine how many distribution centers we want to install and what will be their location, as well as what will be the assignment between the retailers and distribution center, and what will be the shipping amount from one location to the other. The other type of decision is about inventory. We need to determine how many replenishments we need to order every year, and what will be the reorder point for each storage facility, and what will be the order quantity. And the important assumption of this problem is that we assume or we neglect all the inventories in a retailer. So it turns out that in this problem, we only hold the inventory in a distribution center. So it's a single stage stochastic inventory system. In slide 22, so recall that we just discussed so-called economic order quantity model for the continuous review QR inventory system. And similar here, we can also write our economic audit quantity model for this system, as given in the green box here in at the bottom of slide 22. So the economic audit quantity cost, including the fixed ordering cost, is the first term, and the second term is for transportation cost. And the last term is for the cycle store or cycle inventory cost. And here the number N is a variable, which determines what will be the number of replenishments per year. And it turns out that this function is convex in terms of N. So now we are in slide 23. The annual economic order quantity cost will be a convex function of N. So we could derive the optimal replenishment number analytically, as shown in this slide. And then consequently, the optimal annual transportation cost, ordering cost, and cycle stock cost could be also derived analytically, as given in the green box at the bottom of slide 23. So in slide 24, recall that we have discussed the risk pooling effect, and we also need to take into account the risk pooling effect here in this problem. So we could formulate the safety stock cost given in the blue box here. The H is the unit inventory holding cost. C alpha is the standard normal derivative of service neighbor or the so-called service neighbor parameter. Under the square root, we have the lead time L times the summation of the variance in each uncertain demand. So based on this, we can formulate a model as given in slide 25. So the object of this model is to reduce the total cost, which includes, in the first term, is the investment cost of installation for the distribution centers. And the second term is the transportation cost from a distribution center to the retailers. The third term is the economic order quantity cost, which includes the transportation cost from a supplier to the distribution center, the fixed ordering cost of distribution center, and the working inventory cost in the distribution center. And the last term in the object function is for the safety stock cost in the distribution center. We have two kinds of major decisions involved in this problem. The xj is a binary variable to indicate if the distribution center j should be installed. And the binary variable yij is for assignment of the retailers to a distribution center. So in the constraints, we have a single sourcing constraint to restrict at least one and only one distribution center should be assigned to each retailer. And then retailers can be only assigned to those distribution centers that has already been opened. So the entire model turns out to be a non-convex integer nonlinear programming model. Recall that all the optimal decisions about inventory has been already derived analytically, so they are not shown and introduced as a continuous variable here. So in slide 26, here we consider a very small-scale illustrative example with three potential distribution centers and six retailers. And we take different costs of transportation and inventory. So if we compare the figure on the left and the figure in the middle, we can see that if we increase the weight of transportation costs from 1% to 10%, the optimal number of distribution centers increase from 2 to 3. So this reveals the trade-off between transportation cost and the facility location cost or investment cost of supply chain design. If we compare the figure on the left and the figure on the right, see theta, the inventory cost, increase from 1% to 10%. In this case, the optimal number of distribution centers reduced from 2 to 1, and this is partially due to the risk pooling effect. If we group more retailers together, we will somehow reduce the total safety stock cost. So the change of the optimal supply chain network structure as the number, as the weighted ways, the ways of transportation inventory cost reveals how the trade-off between the supply chain design cost, transporting cost, and the inventory cost. So at the bottom of this slide, you can see that there is a computational challenge for this issue. If you want to solve a large-scale problem involving 115 distribution centers and retailers, the entire integer nonlinear programming problem will involve more than 20,000 binary variables. So we need to develop a certain algorithm to adjust this challenge. In slide 27, one of the important properties of this problem, it turns out that we can share all the assignment variables yij could be relaxed as continuous variable without changing the object function, without changing the value of the object function of this problem. So it implies that the entire integer nonlinear programming problem could be relaxed as a mixed integer nonlinear programming problem without changing the object function. And it's also very interesting to know that if we set the inventory cost h equal to 0, I mean we get rid of the inventory term in the object function, then the problem reduced to a so-called uncapacity facility location problem. And as you may know, for uncapacity facility location problem, The linear programming relaxation is always very tight, and usually with a 99% chance, if we solve for LLP relaxation, we come out with the optimal integer solution. Similar for this case, if we solve the NLP nonlinear programming relaxation of this non-convex MINLP, it turns out to be always very effective, and with a very high chance, the solution returns the integer solution. So in slide 28, however, for large-scale problem, still, I mean, with the global optimization of this non-convex NLP is not so easy. So all we do is we develop a decomposition method based on Lagrange relaxation. The key idea is that we dualize the single sourcing constraint, and as you can see in the model formulation slide 28, after the single sourcing constraint was dualized, all the constraints has an index j. It implies that we can then decompose by each discrete center z. So it's somehow a special decomposition method. And of course, this problem involves an implied constraint saying that at least one discrete center should be installed, and we use a special tailored Lagrange relaxation method to address this issue. So in slide 29, some computational results for this example are shown here in slide 29. And in particular, we want to solve instance from 88 discrete centers to 115 discrete centers. And as you can see, for a large scale problem with 115 discrete centers, the original integer nonlinear programming problem, which is also non-convex, involves more than 20,000 binary variables and constraints. And after the model property, we can reform this problem as the MINLP problem, and the number of binary variables reduced to 115, but still we get more than 20,000 continuous variables and constraints. So as in the computational results, we can see that when the problem size increases, the computational time will generally also increase. However, the proposed algorithm always guarantees a very tight gap and very tight solution, and the solution can always return within 1 hour. However, if we solve the problem directly with the global optimization solver Baron, after 10 hours, there's always a gap, and sometimes it will be up to 20%. In slide 13, just a quick note about the continuous review QR inventory policy. In this example, what we consider is that for each replenishment, there is a fixed ordering cost. But what would be the case if there is no fixed ordering cost for the QR continuous review inventory policy? And one of the projects we are working on with PressL is to consider this kind of issue about tank sizing and vehicle loading under uncertainty. And in this case, all the inventory, all the storage facilities are also operating with a continuous review system. There is a meter layer to real-time tracking the inventory level. However, there is no ordering cost. So here, in this case, we derive the optimal replenishment interval and order quantity coming from a trade-off between inventory cost and the vehicle loading cost. So just saying that if we are given a continuous review system, we always can find out with some trade-off to come out with the optimal review period and the order quantity. In slide 31, here we will discuss another problem related to supply chain design with mounted echelon stochastic inventory. And so as you can see in the figure, the problem statement is somehow similar, but a major difference here is that we want to consider both inventory in distribution center and the markets. So it turns out to be a three echelon stochastic inventory system. In particular, we will consider different lead times for different distribution centers. To model this mounted echelon stochastic inventory system, we will use a guarantee service approach. So the model formulation for this example is given in slide 32, which has a lot of equations and formulations. But still, we can see that in the object function, what we are going to do is to minimize the total cost, including the investment cost, transportation cost, and the inventory cost. In the constraints, we have two kinds of constraints. The first one is for the network structure, which is similar to the previous example. And the second type of constraint is for the guaranteed service time, which comes directly, follows directly from the guaranteed service approach. Since all the lending time, guaranteed service time, and the order present time follows a linear relationship, so all the guaranteed service time constraints are also linear. In the object function, we have the nonlinear term coming from a safety store and a risk pooling, and sometimes they will involve multilinear term as the product of integer variables and continuous variables. So we also introduce a few linearization constraints to reduce the nonlinearities. The problem is still a non-convex MINLP problem, where the continuous variable coming from the guaranteed service time and the discrete variables coming from the integer variables to define a network structure. So in slide 33, a small case study of the liquid oxygen supply chain is given in slide 33 here. So we consider a simple supply chain superstructure with two production plants, three potential distribution centers, and six customers. And here you can see that if we solve this problem, solve a supply chain design problem, without considering inventory cost, the optimal structure will be given in the middle of this slide. And if we solve the problem with consideration of inventory cost, the optimal network structure will be given on the right of this slide. And by comparing these two, it shows that it's very important to integrate inventory in supply chain design, because neglecting the inventory will lead to suboptimal solution, which could be totally different from a real optimal one. And in addition to that, we can see that the optimal number of distribution center reduced from 3 to 2 after considering the inventory cost. And this is also partially due to the risk pooling effect that we have discussed just now. So in slide 34, here shows the optimal timing relationship in this case. So for there are two paths of flows in this case. The first path is from the first production plant to the third distribution center and then to customer 4, 5, and 6. The second path is from the second production plant to the first distribution center and then to customer 1, 2, and 3. So here you can see at the bottom, as in the figure in the bottom left, it's not so large, but I hope you could see clearly. So for the guaranteed service time of plant 2 is 3 days. And then there is a transportation time from plant 2 to distribution center 1, which is 2 days. It implies that the worst case replenishment time in distribution center 1 is 5 days. It turns out to be very interesting in this case that distribution center 1 does not hold any inventory. It just guarantees a 5-day service time to customer 1, 2, and 3. So it implies that distribution center 1 is operating as a poor system or a made-to-stock system. Since all the customers need to guarantee a 0 service time to the customers, so it implies that all the inventory and safety stock are maintained in the customer locations. And this also applies for another path from production one, plan 1 to distribution center 3 and to customer 4, 5, and 6. So in slide 35, so far we discussed it still a very small scale problem, and if you have a instance with a few production plants and some markets, then the problem size is not that large. However, if you want to solve a large scale problem, which may be of close to industrial scale, involve 50 production plants, 100 distribution centers, and 200 markets, the entire non-convex MINOP we involve many thousands of discrete variables and continuous variables, as well as more than 1 million constraints. In this case, none of the conversion software could be able to handle this challenge. So what we did is to develop a tailored algorithm based on Lagrange relaxation and successive piecewise linear approximation, as given in slide 36. So in this algorithm, we somehow first dualized still a single sourcing constraint and then decompose the problem by each distribution center or spatial decomposition. And each Lagrange subproblem, which will provide a tight lower bound of the original problem, we don't globally optimize them, but we just solve the MILP, piecewise linear underestimator. Because the piecewise linear underestimator will provide a valid global lower bound of the Lagrange subproblem. And Lagrange problem also provides a lower bound of the original problem. So the piecewise underestimator will provide a valid global lower bound of the entire problem. Once we obtain the lower bound, we will fix the integer variable and solve the reduced problem to obtain an upper bound of the solution. And the algorithm iterating, keep by updating the subgradient until it converges. This method turns out to be very effective, and we try this instance. We try this algorithm to solve a number of problems as we discussed just now, and the results are shown in slide 37. So here you can see that for small scale problem, both the proposed algorithm and the global optimization solver Baron could obtain a global optimal solution very quickly. However, as the problem size increased a little bit, the Baron was not able to come up with the solution after 100 hours with a close gap for 16% gap. As the problem size increased, the proposed algorithm also requires more computational time, but we can always guarantee that the optimality gap is very close. However, with Baron, after running for 100 hours, we could not even come up with any feasible solution for a large-scale instance. So in slide 38, we are going to discuss the last part of this talk, which is the integration of stochastic inventory and process planning under supply and demand uncertainty. In slide 39, here a general problem statement is given like this. We have a chemical complex, including a number of dedicated or single product process, and chemicals and a number of chemicals. The production capacity of each process and the production delay of each process are also given. We also have a number of suppliers to provide all kinds of fixed dose and a number of markets that have uncertain demand of these chemicals. The internal service level is given, and the mass balance coefficient for each production process is also assumed to be linear and given. We also have the unit production inventory and purchase cost. And here we have uncertainty coming from customer demand, which we generally assume a false normal distribution. And we also have uncertainty coming from supply, which somehow we quantify using a service time, the concept service time. So here we could have different suppliers that have different guaranteed service time. For instance, one supplier may have a guaranteed service time of 1 month, and the other one may have a guaranteed service time of 1 week. But the one with the shorter service time may have a higher fixed cost. So there is a trade-off here, and we need to decide which supplier we need to select, and what will be the lead time we want to guarantee to the market. As well as also we need to determine what will be the optimal production, purchase, and sales level, and what will be the inventory level of each chemical involved in this chemical complex. And the object of this work is to minimize the total cost. In slide 14, the major modeling change in this case is that, of course, there could be many chemicals involved in this chemical complex. And the question is, do we need to store all these chemicals? Because some of them could be fixed dose, some of them could be intermediates, and some of them could be final products. And if you go to a chemical plant, there could be all kinds of storage tanks. But sometimes it's not always optimal to store all of them. But what would be the optimal inventory of each chemical? So this is one of the questions we need to address in this work. The second challenge is, how can we deal with the supply and demand uncertainty? And also, how can we handle our recycles and byproducts, which is a special feature of the chemical complex? So the problem turns out to be much more complicated than a standard multinational stockist inventory model. And our approach is to integrate a guaranteed service method and the process planning. In particular, we also consider the quantifying of the uncertain internal demand by modeling the information flow. So I'm not going to the details formulation here, but just to tell you the key idea here is that we somehow take advantage of the property and some theories of a normal distribution of the uncertain demand, and with this we could model information flow and derive the optimal case, the worst case, and the ideal case of information transfer in the internal demand here. So in slide 41, the model still turns out to be a non-convex MILP, and nonlinear terms comes from safety stock turns and from the inventory cost as well as from the process planning cost. So there could be bilinear terms and square root terms involved in this problem. And the integer decision comes from the selection of the suppliers and also from the lead time constraints. However, an important model property is that for any optimal lead time and optimal service time, there must be a multiple of the greatest common divisor of all the timing parameters. So based on this model property, we were able to reformulate this MILP so that the reformulate problem involves only one type of nonlinear term, which is a square root term involved in object function. So based on this, we also develop a branch and refine algorithm based on successive piecewise linear approximation. And this algorithm could guarantee a global optimum. As you can see in the figure on the bottom right, it's a case study from one of the examples we have. The blue line is for the upper bound, and the red line is for the lower bound. And as you can see in the x-axis, as the iteration goes on, the upper bound decreases and lower bound increases until they converge. And we use this algorithm for all the examples we will discuss in the coming slides. It always turns out to be very effective. All the problems are solved to global optima in at most 5 minutes. However, if you want to use Baron, the global optimal solver, it may take 1 hour with the suboptimal solution that has more than 20% optimality gap. In slide 42, so here is the first example we want to discuss. And it's a very small scale problem with three processes, 1, 2, and 3 in the blue boxes, and three chemicals, A, B, and C, in the red circles. So if we solve this problem to the optimum, you can see the optimum of the production level shown in the upper right. So here you can see that the process 1 and process 3 are producing with full capacity. However, process 2 is just half of the capacity. And the reason is because of different unit production cost and different mass balance coefficient. The optimal inventory of chemical A, B, and C are shown in the bottom right. And here you can see the part of deep blue is for a safety stock, and the one for light blue is for a cycle stock. It turns out that in this problem, we need to hold inventory for all the three chemicals. However, if we investigate the optimal timing relationship as shown in the bottom right, it turns out that the inventory, we can see that the inventory here for chemical B is not for process 1, not due to the production delay of process 1, but due to the delay or uncertain supply from supplier 2. And of course, this will be more about problem dependent. And in the next example, as shown in slide 43, here what we consider is to chemical complex with 6 processes, 10 chemicals, 2 suppliers, and 1 market. And what we address here is to compare 2 kinds of inventory management policy. One is called a centralized system, which means that all the chemicals involved in this chemical complex are operating with a centralization method. It means that we coordinate our inventory management of the entire site. Another case is called decentralized system, which is given in the bottom left. It means that each production process in this chemical complex maintain their own inventory for the feedstocks and products. So it's somehow like a local optimizer. And in this case, we solve both instances to optimal, and the optimal inventory level is shown in the bottom right. Here you can see the blue column is for a centralization inventory management, and the red column is for a decentralized system. In particular, you can see that for 3 chemicals, the first one, the second one, and the last one, there is a significant reduction of inventory if you're using centralization method. And it's also interesting to point out that in both cases, we don't need to hold any inventory of the benzene, which is the feedstock of process 4. So in slide 44, another example is to consider a relatively large scale, which involves 20 chemicals and 13 processes. And here, if we solve this instance with the model, the results are given in slide 45, which shows the optimal inventory level for all the 20 chemicals here. It turns out to be very interesting that we don't need to hold any inventory about benzene, about carbon monoxide, and about methanol, and quite a few other chemicals. And most of the inventory in this case are maintained for ethylene, for naphtha, for the cumin, and for the byproducts as well. So it turns out to be interesting as well that, you know, for more some chemicals, the cycle inventory is much more than than a safety stock. However, for others, the safety stock is more or less the same as the cycle inventory. In slide 46, the figure here shows the optimal production level for this case with 20 chemicals and 13 processes. And it turns out that most of the processes are operating with close to full capacity. However, process 12 and process 14 does not produce any product. And this is determined by the production planning. In slide 47, the last example we want to present here is the relatively large scale problem with 28 chemicals and 38 processes. So if we consider this case under different values of the so-called guaranteed service time to the market, which is given in slide 48, if we minimize the total cost under different specification of the maximum guaranteed service time to the market, it means that if we fix the market has different requirement of a service time, and we fix them from 0 days to 15 days, we can see that in the y-axis on the right, the total daily cost, also in the red line here, the total daily cost will decrease as the maximum guaranteed service time to the market increase from 0 to 15. And it turns out also to be interesting that when the maximum guaranteed service time increases from 0 to 3 days, there is a significant reduction of the total daily cost. So it implies that the one operating, if we set a guaranteed service time to the market, it means if we tell the market that we can satisfy all the demand within more 3 days, there could be somehow an optimal choice and a good choice in terms of total daily cost. And the blue columns here shows the total inventory involved in the chemical complex also under different specification of the service time to the market. And of course, different chemicals have different inventory holding costs. But here you just somehow add them together and see what will be the total inventory. And it's still very interesting that the optimal inventory level decreases as the service time to the market increases. And more details are given in slide 49 to slide 55. So here we see the detailed inventory profile at different specification of a guaranteed service time to the market. So if we tell the market that every demand will be satisfied immediately, and then the optimal inventory level as given in slide 49 shows that we need to hold inventory for almost every chemical. And of course, most of the inventory are maintained for propylene, for benzene, and for ethylene, but almost all the chemicals have some certain inventory. However, as the guarantee service center market increased to 10 days, as shown in slide 15, you can see some significant reduction of the inventory in almost all chemicals, and in particular, in this case, most of inventory maintained as a zero inventory, and most of chemicals has zero inventory. It means that if we have a guaranteed service under the market as 10 days, then we don't need to hold inventory for most of chemicals, but just a few important and major chemicals. When the service time further increased to 20 days, we can also see a reduction of the optimal inventory level. And it's in slide 51. So in slide 51, from slide 15 to slide 51, you can also see some reduction of the optimal inventory. And if you further increase of 13 days, as in slide 52, the optimal inventory level also decreased, and the number of zero inventory also increased. And if you go to 14 days, as in 53, and then 50 days, as in slide 54, you can similarly see a very interesting reduction of the total inventory here. So as the conclusion given in slide 55, so what we have done is to develop a few integrated models for a supply chain design operation with stochastic inventory management under the supply and demand uncertainty. And we also develop efficient algorithm to adjust these computational challenges in solving the non-convex MIRP problem. The future extension could be considered the integration with planning and scheduling, because here so far we only consider the dedicated production process without adjusting the multi-product production plan. And we also could consider the integration with the capacity planning for a storage facility and also for a production process. And there could be integration with the multi-site planning. So in the last slide, I want to have an acknowledgement, and I want to say thank you for all your support and help and suggestion. I have been very fortunate to get involved in this EW group, and I personally benefit quite a lot from your support and all the interaction with you. And special thanks will be given to Dr. John Wasit and Dr. Jeff Ferriero in Dow Chemical, and Dr. Joseph Pinto and Dr. Larry Megan in Press Air. It's really a great pleasure to collaborate with you. And of course, in the end, I owe a big thanks to Professor Grossman for his care for my well-being in the past 4 years. And I guess I will say gracias again in 2 days.
Okay, well, thank you very much. So let's see. I hope, we still have some people out there. I don't know if there are there any questions or any comments to Fengji? Fengji. Is anybody out there? Yes, hello. Any comments? Let me maybe just make a couple of small remarks. I think the presentation, I think as you've seen from Fengji, has been quite nice and comprehensive. The one thing, though, that might be worth again emphasizing is the first part that he presented, the single and multi-echelon, are really for, let's call them, single product networks, okay? And I think the big step, in my opinion, that he's given with the last part of the work he presented is for the, let's call it, multi-product network. And he did not, since the equations become fairly more extensive, it becomes a lot more complex, but sort of a key thingy there is, of course, you do have the usual mass balances and so forth, but what becomes really complicated, as Fengji alluded to, is how you propagate the uncertainties in a network like that. Because there's two issues. One, the fact that it's multi-product, but the other one is that it's not this nice single sequential structure shown in parts one and two, that it's just simply sequential, but you can have arbitrary topologies, you have recycles, and that's really what in many ways again complicates the problem. But I would say again, so in part three, the significance is that parts one and two, if I may say so, and without hopefully insulting anybody here, they are sort of the clean OR type of models that are, to be honest, highly idealized. In part three, it's much closer to, I think, what we see in the chemical industry, with the, again, complexities of the network structure and so forth. And so I think that's at least just wanted to again underline the significance of that third piece of work. And also, by the way, so another maybe clarification point that may not be totally obvious is, so part three, often in the literature you may see as quote multi-period problems. So in this case, this is still treat it as a single period problem. The extension to multi-period, I think, you know, is certainly something that would be by all means doable with what Fengji has done here. Okay, so again, just wanted to clarify some of these points. And again, I don't know if there's any questions out there, or I don't know, we do have people here, and Ricardo, say, before Ricardo asks a question, anybody would like to ask a question out there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. The question is that, I mean, the examples that you showed are for inventories of products that are of a continuous nature. For example, you're measuring a chemical feedstock, which is normally a liquid or a gas, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a continuous measure. Now, what would be the change in this problem formulation or the method if you are talking about discrete quantities, like things? For example, you're talking about car parts, or you could be talking about...
Yeah, so you mean what happens if we have that discrete manufacturing? I mean, the products are major in terms of pieces instead of the quantity, right? So I think,
yeah.
I mean, well, it's very interesting, you know, this is a very traditional question in terms of inventory management, and, you know, and it turns out to be, I guess, an important note is that all this theory about inventory management are initially developed for this type of discrete manufacturing instead of for the continuous decay and, you know, continuous quantity. So what I'm saying is that what they do basically is somehow an approximate. For instance, if we end up with a solution that is equal to 1.2 pieces, then they just run out to the nearest integer. And that's what they are always doing in this inventory community. And of course, for the chemical industry, you know, as you mentioned, most of the chemicals are in terms of liquid or in terms of gas. And of course, I mean, continuous quantity is not a big problem. But yeah, of course, there could be some error in terms of rounding, but that's always the case, because if we restrain them to be integer, then the problem will be much more complicated in terms of dimension, in terms of the discrete space, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So what do you think you would do differently if you had that kind of a problem?
So what in that case is we will use similar approach, and then if we end up with a freshener term, if we end up with the optimal solution with freshener, we random them to the integer, random them to the nearest integer. That's
okay.
That's an easier way to handle this type of problem.
Okay.
If I can interject very briefly, I think as Fengji suggests, if you have number of parts, I mean, you can expect them to be usually, you know, maybe in the hundreds and so forth. So doing rounding at that level is probably not going to have a major impact. Rounding is much worse, of course, if you do it with 0.1. So so I think, but actually in principle, you could still, if you really wanted to do absolutely rigorous, just declare the number of parts of being integer. And probably it turns at the, even at the level of branch and bound, things might not be that bad again, just simply because the relaxation might put you very close. Say if you get 95.2, if you branch 95 and 96, the change in the objective is likely to be very small. So,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other question out there?
Well, Ignacio, it's Iro.
Yeah.
I have a comment to you, Fendi. Thanks, the slides were excellent.
Thank you.
And also to you both, the sound was this time really good. In the beginning, we couldn't hear that well, but in the end, after the first seconds, we could hear very well. So that's a good positive feedback on that. So it was excellent. Fancy a question to the algorithm that you have on slide, where is it again? On slide 36.
On slide 36, okay, yeah.
So you solve the MILP relaxation of the AP problem, so that means, is that the one that you say you have on slide 28, or which solution?
It's not shown here, the detailed formulation, but
okay.
The key idea of this so-called subordinate AP is that we consider an alternative formulation of the model in slide, you know, we have a model formulation in slide 32, right? So
yeah.
Here we somehow consider an alternative model formulation of this case, and then we will dualize the constraint and compose the problem by each discrete center. So the subproblem AP somehow a Lagrange subproblem after we decompose for each discrete center, a tensor least subproblem AP is also a non-convex MILP with some square root terms, which is of course non-convex. And the idea here is that this Lagrangian subproblem, the solution of the Lagrangian subproblem provides a very lower bound of the object. And if we consider piecewise underestimator of this subproblem, it will also provide another global lower bound of this object. And turns out that, you know, instead of solving the subproblem to global optimal, we can use the MILP relaxation of this case to solve them to provide a lower bound of the original problem.
So what you say, you use an MILP problem in there for the AP, and the problem P, that's an MILP problem.
Yes, problem P is the original problem, the MILP. So once we solve the MILP relaxation of the Lagrangian subproblem, we'll fix the integer variable and solve the reduced original problem in the nonlinear space. But of course, when we, in the last step, when we solve the reduced P, the reduced problem P, we don't need to solve them to global optimal, right? Any feasible solution of original problem provides upper bound. So we just use any local nonlinear solver to get an upper bound. That's the idea.
That's P as in MILP, do you use DICOPT for it, or what do you use?
Yeah, we use DICOPT, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the case.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, I was just going to make the comment again that Finch is defending on Thursday. So if anybody's interested in him, his thesis, you know, all the details in glory detail are given there. Okay? So maybe just to finish off, I think Ricardo's jumping here to try to ask a question.
Only one question. In the first part, is the demand constant with uncertainty, or it is like seasonal, it changes with the time?
So yeah, that's a very good question.
The question that Ricardo asked is whether the demand is constant or whether it can change like when it's a seasonal demand.
Yes.
So as we show in slide 7, what we somehow assume is that, okay, the expected demand, like the mean value of demand, is somehow constant in a given time horizon.
Okay.
And that's the idea. Okay. And of course, we can consider different, you know, constant values, and you know, we somehow partition this inventory approach into different pieces or things, some multi-period problem.
Okay.
So that's a key idea here.
Okay. All right. So with this, I think we can finish. I'm glad to see we're finishing on time. So I wanted to thank very much for your attention. And I just wanted to announce that our next talk, EWO talk, should be, if I remember correctly, November 17th. And Professor Van Hoof from Tepper Business School, who actually works in the area of constraint programming, will talk about combining constraint programming in problems related to transportation logistics, okay, so vehicle routing type of problems. All right? So again, thanks a lot, and we'll be in touch. And by the way, the slides of Fenji and also the recording of his presentation should be up in the EWO page in, you know, next couple of days. I'll send an email to that regard, okay? So thank you, and bye-bye, everybody. Thanks, bye-bye.
Thank you.